It's time for From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine with Krayshap. A golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around, trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Shortgrass is presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, and brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. And now, from the Shortgrass, here's your host, Krayshap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I am your host, Krayshap. Well, if you missed part one of my sit-down with Connor Lewis, the Society of Golf Historians, you missed out. But the good news is, you can always go back and listen to it. And coming up in this episode is part two of my sit-down interview with Connor. It's coming up after the break. Stay with us.
At Stevens, our philosophy is to invest every dollar as if it were our own. To seize opportunity. To anticipate rather than react. To deliver constant focus in an ever-changing world. And to pursue the objectives of our clients in order to help them reach their financial goals. A proven history of helping companies and individuals. Stevens, member NYSE SIPC.
This is Justin Akre. If shoulder or elbow pain is affecting your daily life, the fellowship-trained physicians at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health are here to help. They offer advanced care for injuries, arthritis, rotator cuff problems, and more, helping you feel better, move better, and get back to everyday life. Call 501-686-TOSH today to schedule your appointment. That's 501-686-8674. The doctor will see you now.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Shortgrass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. UAMS Ortho Now, open at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. If you have an orthopedic injury, sports work, or anything else, go in and see the best in orthopedic care. Open 8 to 8 Monday through Friday and 8 to noon on Saturday. It's located at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health. Well, we're not going to waste any time. I'm going to get you right back to my sit-down with Connor Lewis, who is the founder of the Society of Golf Historians. On the tee, Connor Lewis.
We're sitting down with Connor Lewis, Society of Golf Historians, on Twitter. Great follow, by the way, and you have a weekly newsletter that comes out. We'll get to that at the end and tell people how they can find it and everything. I want to take you to your first time ever stepping foot on the old course at St. Andrews. What was that like?
Oh, it's 2008. It was probably a couple days after my dad's 65th birthday. I was wearing knickers. I had...
You know what you were wearing?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. So I was wearing a pair of tan, they'd call them plus fours, but they're what we'd call them knickers here. I had tan and brown, like Argyle socks. I had wingtip golf shoes in brown. And then I had like a brownish tan sweater and a newsboy cap. And I was carrying my first ever McKinsey golf bag that was tan and taupe. And it said, you know, I think it said just Connor Lewis or something like it. It didn't say the society technically hadn't existed. It wasn't existing then. And I was playing hickory shafted clubs. I will never forget that tee shot because I don't get nervous over tee shots, not in competition or just going out. First tee shot doesn't really faze me. But I pulled out a Jack White hickory shafted driver, and Jack White driver is what Bobby Jones used to win the Grand Slam. Probably the most famous hickory shafted driver, you know, and I told you before I had the RTJ irons by Tom Stewart that were made in St. Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm warming up, taking some practice swings, and I look over my head at the R&A clubhouse, and there are members coming out on the veranda to watch this guy hit hickory shafted clubs. And I was like, yo, you can't mess this up.
Yeah.
You know, if you're the guy with hickory shafted clubs,
right.
And you, in the olden, using an olden word, foozle one, they're going to mock you, right? They're going to be like, this guy should be playing like Big Bertha. Like, what's he doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just piped one right down the middle. I don't even know what I did on the
hole. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but it was not, funny enough, I went out there last year in July, took a group. It was a golf history trip. So I hosted seven people when we, you know, did a golf history trip of Scotland. And I went out there with my modern Callaway and put one out into the sands. I mean, it was just like, you know, you never know. Apparently I needed the hickory shafted driver pulled off, but it was just so special. And it was amazing because, you know, in 2008, you didn't see a lot of that. So my caddy was just mesmerized. And then, you know, like I mentioned, I shot a 79 on the old course. First time ever playing it with hickory shafted clubs. And it was just, it was magical, right?
And that's a place where, only place in the world probably, that you have more people watching you tee off and watching you finish.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Even, yeah, and on any given day, yep. Right? Especially yep. when you finish. They're all up on the 18th. I will tell you a sad story. So my dad and I were there. It's just us. We're doing this tour of Scotland. I had played this great round. The greatest shot I ever hit actually happened on the old course. I had hit it into hell bunker. And I can't remember the club. I thought it was like a mashy niblick that I was trying to hit out of it. And the caddy was like, no, no. He's like, you just need to hit like a wedge, which would be a niblick, and just lay up. And I said, I think I can get over the wall of this and get it toward the green. And he goes, you can't. So my dad was standing behind me with my camera, and I hit this shot. And he takes the photo at the follow through with a splash of sand, and you can see the ball in the air, and it was 5 feet from the cup. Like the greatest shot. I couldn't, if you gave me a modern club, I couldn't have pulled it off.
Right.
And I make birdie. And the very next day we're playing Musselburgh, which is kind of where my soul sits. And that camera fell out of my bag. And so it's like irreplaceable things like that shot. Sure. But my dad and I have photos. I have a photo of standing on Swilken Bridge by myself. I have a photo of my dad standing on Swilken Bridge by himself. The photo of us taken together was on my camera, and it's gone. Yeah, I always remember that shot, and you know, just hanging out with my dad for the week. He's not a big talker, and we just had. It was probably the most I've ever talked to in my life. You know what I mean? And it was about every subject, so it's really cool.
You said in the previous episode about Tiger Woods that's when you probably really thought, okay, hey, this is a cool sport. When I came up, Connor, it wasn't cool to play.
Oh, it wasn't when I was a kid.
What did Tiger do to make it cool from a historical standpoint?
I think for our generation, and this isn't to denounce previous generations, so I don't think that. I think, first of all, he came at the right time where computers, kind of social media was kind of starting, like Facebook or MySpace or whatever. And then he brought like this cool vibe and athleticism. And he had this amazing blend of Jack Nicklaus. There was a little bit of Seve, you know, where he'd find himself in a bunker or behind a boulder, behind a tree, and he'd pull off this wicked shot that nobody thought was possible. There was also like a level of confidence that he had that he was going to win. We've all seen the interview where, you know, he basically said, you know, if I don't win, I lose. And, you know, kind of mocked.
Who else does that?
Yeah, right? Like nobody has that mindset. And then he just went out and won, right? I mean, he was winning at such an insane scale. So, I mean, I think it was a boom of this amazing athlete, this amazing talent, this amazing golfer. Mix that with something that Jack and Arnie and Ben Hogan didn't have, which is like the marketing machine known as Nike, right? Mix that with social media and computers. And, you know, in Jack's time, we had 3 channels. And all of a sudden, we've got 100 channels. We have SportsCenter, right? And SportsCenter makes them cool. And the Golf Channel blows up. And all of a sudden, it's like, who are you going to cover? And he was the guy. So I think all those things, and then he's one of the, it's unfair to say few, but he's this phenom that met the challenge and did what he said he was going to do. And I think that really, it does 2 things. One, it turns a lot of people on and it turns some people off. I mean, there are people that hated him from the get-go.
Right.
You know, and I never quite got that. I mean, I'm all for that, you know, expanding the game.
But I think you look back, Arnold Palmer was the first golfer to make $1 million in his earnings.
Yeah.
And now you can finish 5th in a major and you're going to make $1 million.
You can be the last on the money list and you'll be, make $1 million, right? It's a huge difference now between, you know, the disparity from, you know, the web.com to the PGA Tour or any other, you know, the Nationwide, any of those, like even, you know, you look at the seniors, you know, the senior tour, they're making money. And a lot of that was that bump that we got. I mean, when Walter Hagen won the Open Championship in 1929, he got a check for £100 and he gave it to his caddy because he knew, like, you know, this isn't even going to pay my expenses. What was really going to pay for him is the marketability of being the Open champion. And so he was going to use that to get, you know, more endorsements and playing, mm-hmm. you know, money matches and, you know, kind of go out to the public and do exhibitions. So he understood that value, but think £100 in the '80s, I think they were still making a couple thousand pounds for the Open specifically. It's just like, they didn't make the kind of money that we make now. And there wasn't the marketability. So I think Tiger was the right time, right place, right person to fill that void.
You were talking earlier about the golf ball in a previous episode. The fact that, you know, golf courses in that time of the change of the golf ball, some of them became basically obsolete where they couldn't withstand that new technology that came with the golf ball, the wound ball. Are you in favor of the USGA and the RNA rolling back the distance? I know they've put off that decision. Mm-hmm. But from a historical standpoint, Connor, where do you stand?
I think it's always a tough one. The first thing I always tell people when they ask me that question is that we live in the most interesting times, right? It's kind of the question, different question, but it's like live, right? When you say, you know, I believe maybe it's fake, but the Chinese proverb or curse, as they said, was may you live in interesting times, because interesting times are with turmoil. We definitely live in them, right? Like I think live, spleen the game, the golf ball potentially being rolled back. The last rollback really was 1931. The one comment that I make with the 1931 rollback was that it was botched really badly. So they had to roll, they rolled it back and then they had to roll it forward. When they first announced the rollback, I delight in these moments because then I get to go dive back into the, you know, historical documents and newspapers, and you see newspaper articles that golfers are going to start hoarding golf balls. You know, Gene Sarazen say, you know, this is a balloon ball. It doesn't go anywhere. So they rolled it back. It was just a travesty. Before the end of the year, they had to roll it forward to basically to the parameters of a golf ball we have now. The politically correct answer, I would say, is I will abide with whatever the USGA and RNA decides. My opinion on it is I'm probably more for bifurcation than I am for a full rollback.
Okay.
And I see that in a couple ways. I think there's zero doubt that at the highest levels of the game, how far they are able to hit the golf ball with the equipment they have and the technology that they have at their fingertips, perhaps making some golf courses obsolete. Now, I'd argue that par has always changed. Also, if you were going to counteract that argument, you could say that we are also at the very same time caught in a scenario where we're too afraid to have a major that's under par 70. Again, Oakmont was like a par 80, right? We've had par 75s, we had par 73s, we went to 72s. Now we're trying to make these golf courses 70s. And Bryson DeChambeau got blown up for saying, I think Augusta National was a par 66. He's not wrong. He's not wrong. He wasn't wrong. I should say that. And what he's saying is, if you can get on a par 5 with an iron, maybe even like a 7 iron, it's really a par 4, not a par 5. Now, he didn't play well in that Masters, so it looked foolish. Sure. But from a distance appreciation, if again, looking at, you know, how the Haskell ball changed the Gutty, and now we have the multi-piece ball changing the ball again, not to the same extent, but enough. I think there's a very strong argument we should roll the ball back on the highest level of the game. Now, my counter-argument for that and bifurcation is I just cannot imagine wanting to take distance away from the bogey golfers out there. I mean, I don't know the last stats that I saw, the average golfer, male golfer still hits the ball. I mean, it was like 210 yards. When we talk about, and this is where I have a problem with the talking points that have been put out there about making golf courses obsolete. It's who are we making them obsolete for? If we're talking about the PGA Tour and the majors, I absolutely agree if you're sticking to a par 70 concept. If you're talking about is National Golf Links of America as playable today for you and me as it was, you know, in 1920, I'd say, yeah, I've played it. It's amazing. It's still, you know, can hold up to par, birdie, you know, et cetera. And it's phenomenal. It is not the same scenario that we're in 120 years ago with the Haskell ball where we have to change the golf courses.
But can Pebble Beach, mm-hmm. which is hosting the U.S. Open next year, St. Andrews, which is hosting the Open Championship yeah. next year, can they stand up to it?
Well, that you know, that's the bifurcation argument. Can they stand up to us?
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Can they stand up to a 2 handicap? Absolutely. Can they stand up to a plus 7 handicap? I mean, we'll see, I guess. I mean, the question is, what do you have to do to those golf courses at the highest level of the game?
You got to narrow the fairways.
To protect it, right? And so you have to augment it so much and grow up the rough so much that it's so penal that you have to hit a fairway. And then it becomes, much like I think the argument for Oakmont was, you know, it becomes a different type of argument of, are you hitting fairways versus playing great golf? Then again, at least in the U.S. Open, I would argue that that's always been the test for the U.S. Open. It's been a mental test. But so, no, long-term, I think we're going to have a hard time, I guess, if you want to call, I don't like the term protecting par, but if you want a major championship, or, you know, if we look at it in the days of our forefathers, does it deliver a outstanding test if the lowest round still wins the tournament? Yeah. And we disregard what par is. If it's, I don't know. I look at it both ways. I do think at the highest level of the game, it might be more interesting. But then look at what we're looking to do. I mean, that rollback, Cam Young's hitting 370 with this ball that supposedly hits the rollback standards. What kind of rollback is that? I mean, I think to pull off a rollback at that level, if I'm at the USGA and I'm doing bifurcation, I am probably doing 3 things. I am shrinking the driver head for the professional level. I am decreasing the height of the tee. And I'm not making the ball go less far. I'm making the ball spin more. I'm all right with them being able to hit 370 if you're willing to go all out. I interviewed Dean Beeman years ago, and I asked him if he, as the commissioner of the PGA Tour, would have taken on rolling back the golf ball like he tried to do with the grooves. And he said, yes, I would. He said, I probably wouldn't be the commissioner much longer if I did right. that. But he said, I would. And he goes, but the thing is, he's ultimately said, I wouldn't make the ball go less far. I'd just make it spin
more.
He goes, Jack Nicklaus could hit the ball 350 yards if he wanted to. But he's like, he knew if he didn't hit it on the screws, it was going to go off the map.
Best major. Which one is it?
Oh, gosh. Oh, goodness. I will say it 100% depends on the venue and the conditions. I think there's a very strong argument, and this might be controversial, that in 2026, the best major might have been the PGA Championship.
Wow, that is controversial.
I mean, you think about it like, here's where I took. At the Masters, Rory wins. Rory's a favorite. Everyone's going to love Rory winning. Nobody challenged Rory.
Like, they didn't.
Scotty yeah. couldn't putt in 4 majors, but because Scotty was right there to win every major, couldn't sink a putt. Everybody else wilted. I was there at the Masters on Sunday. I was standing on, that would have been, 13, when Justin Rose 3-putted for eagle. And I'm like, and he walks away with a par. And I was like, oh my God, this thing's over. Like, nobody could do it, right? And then you had, obviously this Open, Ryan Fox, unbelievable. Everybody else did not stand up to the challenge.
And you had no weather.
No weather. No, it was no weather. I think the conditions were perfect for that. I think at Shinnecock, we didn't have the weather we thought we were going to have. Again, nobody really challenged it. I felt like, while I think it was a great major, put it this way, I think if you polled the members of Shinnecock, they probably wouldn't be happy that they didn't unleash what they wanted to unleash. And I will say, Aronimink met that test. I think, you know, people might not like that Aaron Rye won it, but man, that thing was all the way down to the nth of the minute of a great major championship. And I get mad at people on Twitter because anytime we rank the majors, everybody puts the PGA last. And I've argued it's not my favorite, but if you look over the last 10 years, it's delivered. Not always like the greatest venue, But, you know, you have great matchups with like Bryson and Xander going down to it. You have Scottie Scheffler. This year, Aaron Rye just puts on a show and just stood to the challengers. And everybody played, I thought, you know, John Rahm was in that. And everyone like really challenged to win it, I felt like. And the other three majors this year, no default to the players that were trying to win it. But I felt like everybody wilted, including Rory, the last 2 years. I felt like he was the last man standing is what it felt like. And I was at both Sundays and I felt like he had opportunities, right? Like 2 years ago when he hit into 15 and he misses the putt and then, you know, plays really well down the stretch and gets into the playoff. But like Rose was right there. I felt like that was a great major because Rose was really like pushing him, right? And there was a two man. This year, it just felt like everybody else was falling off into the weeds. And then I don't like those majors. You know, I'd rather have, you know, Ryan Fox go out there and hit some amazing shots and make decisions. Although I love you, Ryan Fox, Aaron Rye, but I don't root for you. I don't, and that's unfair because if you're winning your first major, even Scottie Scheffler winning his first, like I'm not a huge fan. I mean, this is awful, but I'm not really a fan of any professional golfer. I try to be unbiased by just focusing on history. I'm not really start to really follow you until you win your second. Because okay. Then I'm like, that's historical. Everyone, you know, interviewing Patty Harrington a couple months ago, he had this great quote. He had several great quotes, but one of them was, the most miserable people on tour are the players that only have one major. He goes, it's like a millstone around their neck. Like, you've won one, but did you luck into it? Were you just good that week? You know, is it essentially the Honda Classic that you won, but you won it on the right week? Or are you historically great? I kind of feel that way. Like, I'm happy for him. I think Ryan Fox, unbelievable story. Aaron, unbelievable story. But, like, I really start to get interested once I think that, you know, you can be a historical great, which means two majors or more. It's not a highest bar. But that's when I get really, like, on your – I want to see history being made.
I like that. I like that a lot. The golfists. I have to ask,
yeah.
Being a historian, mm-hmm. that is spectacular, yeah, by the nuts. Way. Most prized possession
that
Lord. You have.
I mean, that's like picking your favorite kid. I don't have one. I don't. I mean, there are things in there that I would fight to the death to preserve, right? I mean, when we're in Florida, we have hurricanes, and I have several action plans just for the golfists. Of where things go. I mean, I can't even have the power go out because of the humidity here. So I have three or four different locations that things get relocated to depending on where we think the storm's going to go just to protect them.
Does your wife think you're a nut?
Yeah. I mean, I think she's accepted it. Now, I'll give you a couple maybe. I didn't show you this, but I have one of Bobby Jones's personal clubs.
Oh, wow.
That's in that, and I've played it before, by the way. So when I go to play Marion, Oakmont to a certain extent, I'll put it in my golf bag and the people in my group, well, I just let them chip with it. I don't let them take full swings. So that's a really cool one. I think you saw the original design of Augusta National.
Yes.
So that's a 1931 drawing that Alistair McKenzie drew up 1 month after walking on the golf course for the first time, the Fruitlands. And it's actually different than the golf course that is designed today. So there was another drawing that's more famous in 1932 that has the reverse routing. That's the famous one everyone talks about. This predates that. And the routing is actually in the order that they play it today, which is kind of fascinating.
Wow.
I have a photogravure of Willie Park Sr. that's on the far wall that is semi-life size. And that was drawn by John A.T. Bonner, and famous artist. And Willie Park Jr., two-time Open champion, basically commissioned a painting of his father, who was the first Open champion, won four. So 1890, it's an older Willie Park Sr., and it says, like, William Park, champion golfer, and it lists the 4 years, and then it has JTX, JATB. And I picked that up from an antique seller, really not knowing what it was, other than the fact that I'd never seen it before. Started doing research and realized that it was the sitting for the painting, which is a full-size painting that now sits in the R&A clubhouse.
Oh, wow.
And it was commissioned by Willie Park Jr., yeah. two-time Open champion himself.
That's pretty cool.
So that was a great find. I have a lot of great finds, but that one was really super special.
Best golf course you've ever played?
I mean, my favorite golf course is Cypress Point. I've been fortunate enough to play most of the great golf courses in the United States. I've played Augusta National more than a handful of times. Cypress Point's my favorite, specifically in the United States. Augusta is probably one of the most unique experiences. I was lucky enough to, the second time I played there, I stayed in the Butler cabin on the bottom floor. So my room was right next to the fireplace where they hand out the green jacket.
How cool is that?
And I sat in those chairs so many times that week. That was very cool. Like, you get into Scotland, that's a totally different discussion, because then you yes. get into quirkiness, history, and place. Like, you're never going to beat the old course for like being hugged by golf, right? It just feels like everything around that town is so golf specific. I love being there. I could hang out there for a week and not touch the links, and I would be perfectly happy. Prestwick, you know, held the Open, you know, for a dozen years before it went to Arota. It's quirky. It's got blind shots. I love the people there. The pros, unbelievable. You know, my spiritual home is Musselburgh Links, 9-hole course, hosted the Open as a 9-hole course 6 times. 5 Open champions came from its links. It's mostly forgotten. I think if people go to Scotland, I would say, like, when you land, because you're normally landing around noon because you take the overnight flight, go play around at Musselburgh Links. It costs like £45. So it's the cheapest of the Open championship
courses. 9 holes.
9 holes. It's a quick round. You know, you have jet lag and you can just go swing and not care. And there's so much history in those links that if they allowed me to, I'd start my own club there. And the clubhouse would be at Mrs. Foreman's pub, which was, you know, at the end of, I think, I'm going to say the fourth hole, it might be the fifth, but the fourth hole, you used to like finish the hole, like putt out, you'd knock on the window and get a beer and keep playing. Like, it's right on the corner of the course.
That's so cool.
Right? And I was like, yeah. That should be a clubhouse. Like, I don't know what we'd name the club, but it would be, we'd have a club at Musselburgh and just play 9-hole links all day. I mean, I could do that all day long.
All right, real quick, how can people get your golf newsletter?
Yeah.
The Society of Golf Historians.
Yeah, it's a really stupid long name. So I just call it the Society. I probably should change the link, but it is, I hate to say this, is the Society of Golf Historians at beehive.com. So it's BEEHIIV.com.
Connor, last question. Fantasy foursome, living or deceased, you and 3 others that you could play around with, who would they be? As a golf historian, yeah. I'm interested to hear this one.
Number one spot, I'm debating between old Tom Morris and young Tom Morris. I think if I wanted to really watch the majesty of the game, it'd be young Tom Morris. But I think I'm picking old Tom Morris because of his wealth of knowledge, right? He was kind of the first greenskeeper, the first man of golf. So I'd go there. I think we're going to throw in, I love Bobby Jones, but I'm going Walter Hagen, right? Okay. Like Walter Hagen, the stories he'd have, the showman style. I think he'd be a fun round of golf. Let's go Ben Hogan. I'd love to play with him in his prime and really just see how he played.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's probably it, right? I think that'd be a grand open. And I think it would be really interesting to see if Walter Hagen could get in the head of Ben Hogan, because he's always good at mental games.
Right.
You know, I think that would be hilarious.
Connor, I can't thank you enough. Thanks for having me at the Golfist. Man, I love following you on Twitter, and I love reading your the Society.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on.
This is Justin Akre. If shoulder or elbow pain is affecting your daily life, the fellowship-trained physicians at the Orthopedic and Spine Hospital at UAMS Health are here to help. They offer advanced care for injuries, arthritis, rotator cuff problems, and more, helping you feel better, move better, and get back to everyday life. Call 501-686-TOSH today to schedule your appointment. That's 501-686-8674. The doctor will see you now.
That's all the time for this edition of From the Short Grass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. My thanks to Connor Lewis for inviting me to the Golfist to record these last 2 episodes. Remember, when you find your ball marker on the green, fix it and a couple of more. And I hope to see you sometime soon from the Short Grass.
You have been listening to From the Short Grass, presented by UAMS Health Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf.
This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network in association with Majestic Cubby Productions.